You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
See, y'all, I told you the problem was October. I told you there was nothing wrong with the Sacramento Kings. Turns out, it's just a month that can cause a team to get off to an 0-5 start. But now that November has begun, the team has remembered how good they are. The October Halloween curse of bad basketball is behind us. The Sacramento Kings have won 2 in a row. Great start to their 3-game East Coast road trip. And they're starting to inch their way back out of the early hole this season, working their way back towards a respectable 500 record. Still got a bit of a ways to go, but certainly off to the right start here. Welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast, your hub for Sacramento Kings conversation, coverage, in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, interviews with local and national experts. We've got it all for you all year round, centered around your Sacramento Kings. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK. That's the flagship radio station of the Kings in Sacramento. I work there as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter. And last week, as many of you heard, was not the happiest of campers. I don't think many people surrounding this team that call themselves fans of this team could say that they were too pleased with how this Kings season had gotten underway, especially after what was an extremely low point, which was last Wednesday's home loss to the Charlotte Hornets. That was the game that I think everybody expected the Kings to get their first win and to begin the turnaround. After losing that game at home, a game where the Kings were booed off the floor by their own fans, I think it really started to settle in for a lot of us that expectations in this offseason were a little bit premature. And I talked a lot about expectations and the removal of expectations on Friday's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast. Of course, as soon as I have that conversation, more of a doom and gloom tone than normally what you get around here on Locked On Kings. As soon as I have that conversation, the Kings take the floor on Friday night against a Utah Jazz team that had absolutely embarrassed them about a week ago and beat them. Go figure. So we're going to be talking about the Kings win over the Utah Jazz, and then we'll be talking about yesterday's comfortable, dominant win over the New York Knicks inside Madison Square Garden. Discuss a little bit about what's changed, if anything, between how the team is playing now and how they were playing when they started 0-5, and then what's changed for us expectations-wise for this team going into Wednesday's game against the Toronto Raptors. So plenty of stuff to get to. We will start with this Utah Jazz win where the Kings took it 102-101. And I have the privilege of every time the Utah Jazz come to town, because we're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and the Utah Jazz radio broadcaster David Locke is one of the founders of this podcast network, and he is the host of the Locked On Jazz podcast. So every time he comes to town, he requests that I work with him on his radio broadcast as a statistician. And I do this for a few teams. I also usually work with the Los Angeles Clippers when they come to town. I've worked with the Miami Heat a couple of times when they come to town. I've worked with the Bucks. I've worked with the Spurs. And it's something I actually really enjoy doing for two reasons. One, I get to work on a broadcast, and I work as a statistician. So basically my job is to sit next to them, listen to the watch the game, listen to how their broadcast is going, and provide stats and provide updates. So when there's a run, I provide those numbers to the broadcaster so they don't have to keep track of it. David Locke had me keep track of the amount of half-court possessions versus transition possessions for the Sacramento Kings. So I was jotting that down and following that. That's my job. But I enjoy doing that for radio broadcasts, particularly road radio broadcasts, because I'm provided with a complete game's worth of other teams' perspective about the Sacramento Kings. And I'm a firm believer that if you listen to different perspectives, even if you disagree with them, you can learn something from them, which is why I always encourage my Locked On Kings listeners to go and listen to the other Locked On podcasts. If the Kings are in between now and when the Kings play the Toronto Raptors on Wednesday, go listen to the Locked On Raptors podcast for an episode or two so you can get a proper preview of this team and what what's going on with them and what the storylines are around them and maybe their idea of what the Sacramento Kings are heading into this game on Wednesday. Even if you leave that podcast feeling maybe offended or frustrated because they didn't give the Kings the respect that you think they deserve, you can learn from it and you can grow from it. And I really enjoy doing that. What was interesting to me was that David Locke was talking with his partner Ron Boone, and they were discussing how coming into this game they felt like it was going to be a loss for the Jazz. And I turned to him and I gave him kind of this funny, like, are you messing with me kind of look while he was on the air. But they sensed almost a trap game because the Kings were 0-5 coming off of a bad loss to Charlotte, and last time they played the Jazz, they had been embarrassed. Well, if I had not just done a remove expectations episode of the Locked On Kings podcast, I actually would have agreed with a lot of it. The Kings were set up in the weird way that sports and basketball in particular works. The Kings were set up to have a comeback and to win that game. Now, they nearly lost it, and we're going to discuss the Kings' poor, to say the least, offensive execution here in just a little bit. Really the only major negative from this game. But look, I'm happy it's a win. A win is a win regardless. The Kings needed a win no matter if it was ugly or gorgeous. And this one certainly was ugly, but it was a win. And the Kings desperately needed to get momentum on their side and a good win against a really, really good team in the Utah Jazz that are expected to have deep playoff hopes and a deep playoff run in the Western Conference. But Locke and Boone both predicted and felt that this game was going to be a trap game and that the Kings were going to find a way to come out and win. And lo and behold, they were correct as the Kings beat the Jazz 102 to 101. Offense just was bad. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat things. The offense was not good. What was good was the fact that shots were falling for the most part, especially in the first half. Second half, they slowed down significantly. But in the first half, the shots were falling, a lot of them from mid-range. So it disguised the fact that the Kings were not moving the ball. It was way too much isolation offense. Now, let me give the Utah Jazz credit. I know they have Rudy Gobert at the center in the paint, and he changes a lot of what you do. I also know that the Utah Jazz preach defense, and their perimeter and wing defenders are very good as well. So I also recognize that maybe it was the Utah Jazz's defense and them being the opponent that affected or changed how the Kings played on the offensive end of the floor, but way too much isolation ball. Locke and I noted many, 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 many times throughout the game, there were stretches of 4, 5, 6 straight Kings possessions with maybe one pass, but most of them zero. Like, it was either Harrison Barnes isolation or De'Aaron Fox isolation or Buddy Hield isolation. Everybody else was just standing around. And that, honestly, is what allowed the Utah Jazz to get back into the game. The Kings led by 12 points early, and I mean, I didn't expect them to be able to build upon that or maintain that throughout the entire game, but the flow dropped off significantly, and you figured the Kings' shooting was going to slow down a bit. Now, they did finish the game shooting 48% from the field, 27% from three-point range, and only 70% from the free throw line, so the offense dropped off a little bit. But now to the positive. The reason why the Kings won this game was the defense. The defense is what got them through the really bad patches of isolation offense when the shots just were not falling. It was the defense that the Kings held. And I was impressed by that because of the fact that a lot of times how you're doing on offense dictates the effort that you're giving on defense. And even though the Kings were making their shots for the most part, I did not expect them to be as consistent on the defensive end of the floor as they were in this game. They forced the Jazz into a lot of mid-range jumpers of their own, which, as you know now in the modern NBA, the mid-range jumper is considered to be the worst shot in basketball. You might as well take a couple step feet out and get that one extra point or attack the basket, because at the rim, it counts the same as a mid-range jumper. So the mid-range jumper is the worst shot in basketball and the worst shot in the NBA today. And the Kings forced the Jazz to shoot a lot of them, Donovan Mitchell in particular. But when the Kings' offense started slowing down in the second half, the defense stayed consistent. They continued to give defensive effort. And the Kings weren't getting out in transition much. I think I counted, there was less than 10 transition opportunities for the Kings in this game. All credit to the Utah Jazz. They knew they had to get back, and they did so quickly. However, that did not stop the Kings from, like I said, having the decent shooting game that they did, and that did not stop the Kings from trying to get out in transition by creating quick defensive stops and crashing the boards. And speaking of crashing the boards, the Kings' offensive rebounding, I mean, it was the reason they won this game with the Harrison Barnes offensive rebound put back just before the buzzer sounded off the Nemanja Bjelica missed three. But offensive rebounding was key for this Kings team in this game. And it was, it was a gang effort. Bjelica had a couple of really good offensive boards. Dwayne Dedmon, I thought, had his best game as a Sacramento King. He looked fantastic. He had a couple of very impressive offensive rebounds off the bench for the Kings. Dedmon ended up finishing with 10 points. He did go only 1 of 6 from three-point range, but I like the shots that he's taken. Had 2 offensive rebounds, 7 rebounds total. Also had a pair of blocks. So a really good game for Dwayne Dedmon defensively. Provided a nice spark off the bench with Rashawn Holmes now starting at the 5. Offensive rebounding as a team was huge for the Kings in this game. They didn't out-rebound as a team, they out-rebounded Utah, which is an impressive feat, 38-36, but they out-rebounded Utah offensively 11-6, which was the difference in this game. Holding Utah to 47% shooting from the field, 39% from three-point range. They did allow them to get to the line 27 times, but Utah missed 7 free throws, another big difference in this game. Kings did what they needed to do to hold on and win this one. It took some late-game heroics, like I mentioned, by Harrison Barnes, but it was just, you could see the relief on the faces of all these players in the locker room and on the court as the final buzzer sounded and they were walking off to a cheering crowd in the Golden 1 Center and to their first win of the season. Now, a lot of the players in the locker room, Luke Walton, some of the coaches have said that they believe this is the opening of the floodgates for the team. I'm a little hesitant to agree with that. I don't think that one win and the way they won that game is a perfect indicator now for success the rest of this season, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And then, of course, their win over New York yesterday helps that run and that streak continue. Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You can get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, at manscaped.com. I have written down here in front of me what I was thinking throughout the entire Kings win over the New York Knicks yesterday. And that's that how the Kings looked against the Knicks is how they should have looked and should have played. And the result is what should have happened last week on Wednesday against the Charlotte Hornets. Now, I spent all of Friday last week telling you to remove expectations from this Kings team, so I'm not saying that I came into this Kings-Knicks game expecting the Kings to have a dominant victory over the Knicks, despite the fact that I saw and believe that the Kings have a significantly better roster than the Knicks, because, well, they do. But the Kings also have, in my opinion, a significantly better roster against the Charlotte Hornets, and they weren't able to get the job done in their own building. So I wasn't expecting the Kings to look as good against the Knicks as they did. But hey, they got that win under their belt on Friday night, and clearly that gave them some momentum to start this road trip. And it's paid off, at least in this immediate game, as the Kings are the better team, were the better team, and look like it from basically start to finish in this win over the New York Knicks. Now, coming into this game, the Kings and the Knicks were the two worst teams in basketball. Both teams sitting at 1-5. Now, of course, the Kings are 2-5, and the Knicks are 1-6 after the Kings beat them 113-92 yesterday. It was a fantastic game for De'Aaron Fox. Back-to-back solid games for him. Offensively, he's playing, you can tell, with a chip on his shoulder, taking the brunt of the load offensively, attacking the rim aggressively, which is what you want to see out of your superstar point guard. Defense, once again, was great. Now, I'm not expecting the New York Knicks to absolutely be a lights-out offensive team, but they do have offensive threats. And the Kings, anytime you can hold a team in the NBA to under 100 points in the modern NBA today, you had a good defensive performance. And the Kings absolutely did have a good defensive performance. At one point, they led by 32 points, but in the second half, they allowed that to falter a little bit, and they allowed the Knicks to make it more of a respectable final score than what it actually was. A lot of that had to do with the fact that the Kings were playing with such a big lead, and I kind of let off the gas a little bit, which is not ideal, but it's okay. I'm not going to pop the mic here today and find a way to complain about that. Rebounding, surprisingly, has not been bad for this team this year. I mean, remember, we thought rebounding was going to be one of the biggest disasters about this squad. But rebounding has been, I mean, it's not great, but it's not a consistent problem. They out-rebounded the Knicks 49-39, another 9 offensive rebounds for them, 40 defensive rebounds. They did their work on the glass. Ball movement in this game was significantly better than the ball movement against the Utah Jazz, which speaks volumes to me and also goes to support my theory that the Utah Jazz defense also played a massive part in the Kings being a little too ISO heavy on Friday night. Only turned the ball over 13 times too, having 25 total assists. Did force 7 steals, 5 block shots as well. The Knicks only shot 40% from the field, just 25% from 3-point range, and really shot themselves out of the game from the free throw line as well, going 20 for 31. Still too many fouls by the Kings, allowing the Knicks to get to the line 31 times, but did not really end up hurting them in this game. Offensively, the Kings had one of their best shooting games of the year. Again, 48% from the field, 38%, 15 of 39 from 3-point range, and 64%, 16 of 25 from the free throw line. Buddy Hield had a great game as well. This box score looking a lot like last year's box scores, with Fox and Hield both leading the team in scoring. Fox with 24 points, Hield with 22. He shot 50% from the field, including 5 of 11, 45% from 3-point range. How about 10 rebounds for Rashawn Holmes to go along with 14 points for a double-double for him? He did get into a little bit of foul trouble with 4 fouls, but was very aggressive. Also had a blocked shot, a plus 21 on the game, so he's been great. Starting at the center position for the Kings, Nemanja Bjelica has been extremely consistent, which you love to see. And I had a brief interaction with Tim Maxwell, Sacktown Royalties Tim Maxwell, on Twitter. He posed the question towards the end of this game that with how well both Holmes and Bjelica have been playing, what happens when Marvin Bagley comes back? Well, if the Kings want to ease Marvin Bagley back into it and bring him off the bench, they certainly can do that with how well that both Bjelica and Holmes are playing. But remember, Bagley broke his right hand, which is his non-shooting hand, and he's still able to, he can't obviously compete in like in full contact practice or things like that, but he's able still to work. He's able still to make sure his cardio is up. He's working with his left hand. He's getting workouts before every single game. He's staying in shape. It's not like he's sitting on the couch rehabbing any kind of leg, knee, or ankle injury. So he is able to, he will be able to, in my opinion, and from what I've understand, he'll be able to insert himself right back into the starting lineup when he returns in early December at the latest from this this fractured thumb injury that he is dealing with. So I fully expect when Bagley comes back that he'll be reinserted into the starting lineup. But what does that mean for his partner in the front court? To me, I don't see how you can remove Nemanja Bjelica from the starting lineup with how well he has been playing. Out of his mind, Bjelica has been very, very consistent. Easily the most consistent King this season thus far. He spaces the floor. He's been knocking down outside shots. I've been impressed with his defense. I've been impressed with his ability to rebound the basketball, and he's really taken that upon himself as well for being such a perimeter big man. Nemanja Bjelica, to me, deserves to continue to start at that 4 spot, assuming he continues to play this well till when Bagley comes back. But if Bagley were to come back, let's say for Wednesday's game against the Raptors, I would start Bagley at the 5, I would start Bjelica at the 4, and then the same 3 of Fox, Hield, and Barnes at the 1 through 3. To me, Marvin Bagley would in that lineup have all the room he needed to work. I understand he might be a little undersized and underweight for a center, but that the Kings haven't hesitated from going small already and using a pairing of Barnes and Trevor Ariza together. So why would they hesitate putting Marvin Bagley at the starting center spot? With Bjelica out on the perimeter, that would give Bagley all the room that he needs to work, would also continue to leave the paint relatively open. It's no disrespect to Rashawn Holmes, because Holmes has been fantastic, but it's an improvement to what has been working between Holmes and Bielitsa right now. Marvin Bagley is a better offensive player than Rashawn Holmes. Holmes may be a better defensive player as of right now, but the way that the Kings have been using Holmes in the pick and roll and how he's been so effective over the last few games, they easily can use Bagley like that and then some. So that's the move that I would make, but I'm curious if that's what the Kings will end up doing. They still have a lot of time, or a fair amount of time, to gather more information and make that decision. But hopefully that's a hard decision to make, not an easy decision, which means that Holmes and Bielitsa are continuing to play good basketball, and maybe even Dwayne Dedmon is continuing his solid input off of the bench. Like I mentioned, rebounds, ball movement, both great in this game for the Kings. Their defense, great as well. If the Kings can continue that, I'm not going to predict a lot of wins this year or significantly more wins, but I will say that they will have a lot more of an opportunity to win games if they continue to play with that kind of hustle and energy in those game-changing stat columns like they've done over the past two games. So what has changed with this Kings team to where they go from an 0-5 start and everything's looking terrible to them going 2-0 over the last two games? Well, they're getting more used to playing with one another. You can see the veterans are slowly getting more comfortable. Dwayne Dedmon looks a lot more comfortable off the bench. I think the addition of Rashawn Holmes into the starting lineup was a great move that has paid off already for Luke Walton. De'Aaron Fox has been significantly more aggressive offensively, but mostly the guys that the Kings need to make shots have been making shots. The Kings haven't lost, or the Kings didn't start the season 0-5 because of their defense. Now, their defense didn't help them, but the reason why the Kings started the season 0-5 is because offensively they haven't been performing at the level that we expect from them and at the level that they were performing last season. Over these last two games, while the Utah Jazz offense wasn't the greatest, they were making shots. And offensively, this team is starting to wake up and figure each other out a little bit more. And that's the biggest difference that I'm seeing between the first five games of the season and these last two. But beyond that, it's not that significant of a difference. It's just this team starting to make shots and starting to figure each other out. I'm not seeing a night and day switch between how the Kings are taking the floor, and I'm not looking at these last two games and going, wow, this team looks completely different, because they don't. They're just making shots. They're playing better together. They're getting more comfortable. They're doing what they should be doing, which is giving a ton of effort on both ends of the floor on a nightly basis. That's what you want. That's what you expect from this Kings team. I don't expect wins. I don't expect a playoff run anymore. I don't expect any of that. I do expect effort and hustle on a nightly basis. And over these last two games, the Kings have given that effort and given that hustle, and it's resulted in two big fat W's. I don't think that is a coincidence whatsoever. Also, what should change with our expectations now? Should we expect this Kings team to go 4-0 and a perfect 3-0 here on this road trip? Should we expect them to beat the Toronto Raptors on Wednesday? No, not necessarily. Just continue the same expectation that I just said. Continue to expect this team to give hustle and give effort. Not delivering in those areas, to me, is unacceptable. A loss is acceptable depending upon the circumstances. The Kings having a bad shooting night, or Buddy Hield having a bad shooting night, or De'Aaron Fox having a bad shooting night, that's acceptable, because that kind of stuff is going to happen from time to time. But never should the Kings take the floor and we're coming on, or we're talking about the game after it's over or the next day saying, man, the Kings just didn't try. Like, that should not be even close to our vocabulary for the remainder of this season. I'm hoping to have an interview for you on tomorrow's episode of Locked On Kings. We'll also preview the Kings and the Toronto Raptors on Wednesday before their matchup. I got to tell you, it's so much more fun doing a Locked On Kings podcast after Kings wins than it has been after the 0-5 start that we suffered last week. But I thank all of you for sticking with me, for turning to me and turning to Locked On Kings for updates and for reactions through that tough time. I truly appreciate it, and hopefully we have more enjoyable times together now over the course of the remainder of the season. Hey, 77-5 is still on the board, people, which would be, of course, the best record in the history of this franchise. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm also saying it's not going to happen. Hey, it's still mathematically possible. Remember, everybody, it's October's fault. November is here, and that means the Kings are never going to lose a game again. It's no loss November. Let's just call it for what it is. And for those of you that don't understand, because I had some people actually honestly ask me if I believe that, that's a joke. The change of the month has nothing to do with how the Kings are playing. They're just figuring each other out a little bit more. They're winning games. They're playing better basketball, and they're starting to make shots. That's why they've won these last two games, not because of the change of the month. I'm ashamed that I have to clarify that here at the end of the Locked On Kings podcast, but I will bid you farewell until tomorrow. My name is Matt George. Thank you so much for listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.